To you and to all who can hear my voice, I declare that I am a candidate for President of the United States, and I am running for you.
With those words delivered on Federal Hill Saturday morning, Martin O'Malley officially launched his campaign. The former Baltimore mayor and Maryland governor presented himself as a progressive, decrying Wall Street corruption and income inequality to gain a foothold against frontrunner Hillary Clinton and perhaps carve out space as a more mainstream Bernie Sanders. This is Dan Rodericks. Stay tuned for a conversation about O'Malley's candidacy in the hour ahead with WYPR's Fraser Smith, Barry Raskovar of Political Maryland, and Malia Cromer of the Goucher Poll. After the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. On Saturday, a couple days ago, Martin O'Malley made it official. He's running for the 2016 Democratic nomination for president. Former Baltimore mayor, former Maryland governor, stood atop Federal Hill with the Inner Harbor to his back and declared himself a progressive who was willing to take on Wall Street for Main Street. Let's hear some of what he had to say.
I want to talk with you today about the American dream, about the American dream we share, its powerful history, its current condition, and its urgent need of rebuilding. Yeah. Our nation was founded on two self-evident truths, that all of us are created equal, and that we are endowed by our Creator with certain rights to life, to liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And here's another reference from the speech, an excerpt from the speech, Martin O'Malley talking about the city in which he was making this speech, Baltimore.
Television sets around the world were filled with the anger and the rage and the flames of some of the humblest and hardest hit neighborhoods in Baltimore. For all of us who have given so much of our energies to making our city a safer, fairer, and more prosperous place, that was a heartbreaking night for all of us. For us, Baltimore is our country, and our country is Baltimore. And there is something to be learned from that night. There is something to be offered to our country from those flames. For what took place here was not only about race, not only about policing in America, it was about everything it is supposed to mean to be an American.
And we'll hear some more excerpts from the O'Malley speech from Saturday during this hour of the show. You're welcome to call in and share with us your thoughts about what you heard from Martin O'Malley, now a presidential candidate. 410-662-8780. This is Midday Politics. We're joined today by WYPR senior news analyst and Daily Record columnist Fraser Smith. Fraser, nice to have you here on the show with us.
Good to be with you, as always, Dan.
Saw you up on Federal Hill on Saturday.
I was there.
We're going to get your thoughts about what Mr. O'Malley had to say in just a few minutes. Barry Raskovar is also with us, I'm happy to say, longtime Maryland political commentator who blogs at politicalmaryland.com, out with a fresh blog posting today about Martin O'Malley's presidential dreamin'. Nice to have you with us, Barry.
Always a pleasure, Dan.
And Malia Cromer is back with us, a polling expert from Goucher College. She runs the center there devoted to polling and creates the Goucher Poll and has some interesting insight for us on how Marylanders feel about Martin O'Malley. Malia, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
And you went up on Federal Hill, too, on Saturday.
Yes, I live in the neighborhood, so it was an easy walk.
Okay. Barry, how about you? Did you watch on TV?
Oh, no.
You were up there, too?
I've been there, done that.
Okay.
I've seen a few of them.
Okay, so what did you do? Did you?
I saw it on the internet.
That's okay. All right, yeah. Good. Because that's a different view of it. Mm-hmm. Actually, Malia, I'll start with you because you thought, you know, it plays differently in person versus on TV or on the internet. So O'Malley's speech, your thoughts.
It was absolutely one of those things that were made for TV. When I was there, it didn't seem as grand, as impressive as what I've seen in the past, these really grand presidential announcements. It seemed so much smaller in person. And a lot of people had noticed that there was a lot of diversity on stage, but not a lot of diversity in the crowd.
Of people standing behind Martin O'Malley. Yeah, that too. What did you think of the speech?
It was, I think, your common fodder with has a lot of the typical classic Americana themes, the, you know, the power of the middle class, a really strong progressive kind of populist flair. But it was really, I think, a very bread and butter speech for him. I think we've seen a lot of this before. We've heard it before. But the nation, on the other hand, hasn't heard it before from him.
Frazier, your thoughts, please.
Well, you know, the national press, for the national press and for the local press, it really wasn't an announcement. I mean, most of us have assumed that he was running for maybe a year. So it was kind of a performance. And I think, as you have pointed out, sometimes he doesn't really seem sincere, and it's because he's trying too hard, I think. You know, he is hitting, as we all know, he's hitting all the right themes, rescuing the American dream. I mean, in a sense, he is the American dream. You know, he is the guy that's proving what your parents told you. You can grow up and be anything, including President of the United States. And, you know, there he is. He is basically turning around what all the naysayers have said. I mean, it's amazing, actually. He's like the two or three go-to people in this race. Nobody else was willing to do it. Nobody else wanted to run. And he's doing it. I mean, so I think that took some courage.
Barry, your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I think courage is the right word. And Martin O'Malley has always shown this tendency to do the unexpected, to take the risk. And in politics, unless you take that risk, there's no chance that anything's going to happen. You know, he did it when he first ran for the city council, for the state senate, against then incumbent Senator Johnny Pica, and almost won. It was a handful of votes.
42 votes, I think, separated them. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a shocking thing. So he turns around, he runs and wins for the council. He marries into a political family, the Curran family. And then he surprises most people by not only running for mayor, but as a very much an underdog. He wins that election fairly easily. And you know, 7 years later, he runs again for governor against an incumbent, Bob Ehrlich, and beats him too. So Martin O'Malley is someone who knows that politics is about taking chances and risking it all. And he's willing to do that, but this time, as I said in my column today, he's really up against a Mount Everest.
Well, let's talk about what he's up against. Hillary Clinton leading in polls. I was curious about O'Malley's standing here in Maryland, if that's any gauge of how the nation might receive him. Have this interesting question about governors or former governors who seek to run for president. We've never been, well, I won't say we've, yet no one in this room has been here before. Albert C. Ritchie was a governor of Maryland who ran for president in 1932. I don't think anybody in this room was around. Oh, Frazier, you were.
He ran three times.
You just raised your hand.
I was here, yes, definitely.
He ran three times for president.
He did. And, you know, he was offered the vice presidential spot on the ticket, and imagine this. He said, no, I disagree with you so thoroughly that there's no way I could honestly, with myself, run.
That was with Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah. In 1932.
Let's talk about what he's up against. First of all, there's Hillary Clinton. Washington Post had a poll last fall. It goes back a ways now, October, but it showed that Hillary Clinton among Maryland Democrats with like 63% of the vote and O'Malley 3%.
I think Malia. What's really interesting about this O'Malley and a lot of his message is that he talks about making these choices. He made these tough choices to fund education. And so Marylanders, they've had to pay for all the tough choices. The rest of the United States hasn't. So he can talk about these types of choices he's made, and it might play very well with the national audience if he wasn't going against Hillary Clinton. It would be so interesting to see this race without her as a factor, how O'Malley would look nationwide if he wasn't standing in her shadow. So everything he can do, it appears that she can almost do better, or she has done more. She has been in the national stage longer. So it's just, although around, I think, 30%, our last poll found that Marylanders would like to see him run around only 30%, she's just more popular than him, even in his own state. And it'll just be very tough for him to ever overcome that nationwide.
Your question was, would you like to see him run for president, not against Hillary Clinton? Just 30% said, yeah, we'd like to see him run for president.
Right.
And that was that your December poll?
That was our February poll.
February, okay.
So we released in early March, and so that's 30%. It's pretty stable over time. But among Democrats, he did have a pretty decent favorability rating for a two-term governor. He was around in the upper 50%. That's not bad, especially
after two terms,
it's not bad. But it's just tough. It'll be really hard for him to get out of the shadow.
I'm curious. Bill Clinton was a governor of Arkansas. George W. Bush, governor of Texas. Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts. How did those fellows fare in their own states at around the time they announced that they were running for president?
So I think that they fare a little bit better than he did around the time he was running for president. So it's not just him. I look at Chris Christie's another, I think, more contemporary example. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of talk about him throwing his hat into the race and him running, and his favorability ratings are now not great. They were, I think, lower than O'Malley's were during his last term.
Barry, I want to go to you on this. Since his numbers are so low in the polling that we see, I know it's a year away from the primaries, but, you know, O'Malley's lower than Joe Biden, behind Elizabeth Warren, behind Bernie Sanders even. So is there any chance for O'Malley to do this? Do you have to have a Hillary implosion of some kind for this to happen?
Well, clearly you do have to have the front runner stumble. And it's entirely possible something might happen because there's almost a media frenzy to get Hillary, to find something that they can pin on Hillary Clinton. And at the same time, you have the Republican right wing already taking shots, throwing as much mud as they can on Hillary Clinton. And it could be that that will have a corrosive effect. The other thing is that the Iowa caucuses on the Democratic side tend to be a lot more liberal than you would expect for a Middle Western state. So this is fertile territory for a Bernie Sanders or for a Martin O'Malley. The problem is it's still Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State,
former senator, former first lady.
Former first lady. Mm-hmm. She's got enormous federal experience. You know, who would you trust with a world crisis, Martin O'Malley or Hillary Clinton? It's pretty clear which way you're going to go. On top of which, she'd be the first female president. And that's tough to overcome, that combination.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here if you'd like to join our conversation on Midday Politics today. I want to go back to this soundbite that we just heard from O'Malley's speech about Baltimore. Baltimore, our country is Baltimore. Baltimore is our country. Here's O'Malley standing there in Federal Hill with as a warm day with a very mild breeze. I wish there was more of that breeze. But there's sparkling Inlet Harbor behind him. And we've just come off one of the worst periods in Baltimore history and still in it. High tension in the city. May homicides numbering a number we haven't seen since 1990, I think. So there's that backdrop. It's beautiful on TV, but there are also these other images. Now, O'Malley addressed them in that soundbite we heard, but I wonder if he went far enough in addressing that, and if he addressed that in a way that made people think, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, honest, facing up to maybe his own part in this, his own failing as a mayor, as a governor, and with a city that it's had these problems of the last month or so. What did you think of his reference to Baltimore's problems, Frazier?
Well, he had a long list of issues that he had to address, and it was a laundry list, and he did that. And so I don't know, and particularly because he was somewhat implicated in the causes for the unrest, I think it was about as good a turn as he could have given it. I mean, he said, look, the problems you saw here, you saw them, are not just in Baltimore. Right. This is not a Baltimore problem. This is a country. That's just what he was talking about Baltimore being the country and the country being Baltimore. We have problems. We have things to deal with. We have things to work on. So I thought that was about as good as he could do.
Malia, what about you? What did you think of that?
I think that Martin O'Malley needs name recognition nationwide. And as terrible as all the events that have happened in Baltimore, people outside of Baltimore have not had to live through it and don't have to deal with it on a daily basis. So this gives him a national platform to talk about something that the entire nation was glued to during the events.
Even if there are some who want to blame him for part of it.
But the people who are going to blame him are the people on the inside, not so much on the people on the outside.
Interesting.
Yeah, the problem for Martin O'Malley is going to be when he registers, say, above 15% in the polls, in which at that point the media and the other candidates for president are going to start raising issues such as, you know, what about your mayoral performance and your zero tolerance policy? You know, what about your tax everything attitude as governor? Right down the line, that's when it's going to get tougher for Martin O'Malley. The easy part really is now, because he is a superb retail politician, going door to door, going into diners, just meet and greet events. He and Bob Ehrlich are the best two at that I have seen in Maryland in my time.
Barry Raskevar from Political Maryland, C. Fraser Smith, WYPR senior news analyst and Daily Record columnist, and Malia Cromer from the Goucher Poll at Goucher College with us for this hour of midday. We welcome your comments and questions, 410-662-8780. As we go into the break, we'll listen to another bit of Martin O'Malley's speech delivered Saturday morning from Federal Hill, making it official that he's a candidate for the Democratic nomination.
Understanding precedes action. And we must understand that what happened to our economy, the damage done to the American dream we share, did not happen by chance. Powerful, wealthy, special interests here at home have used our government to create in our own country an economy that is leaving a majority of our people behind, an economy that has so concentrated wealth and power in the hands of the very few that it has taken opportunity out of the homes of the many. Tell me how it is that not a single Wall Street CEO was convicted of a crime related to the 2008 economic meltdown. Not a single one. Tell me how it is that you can get pulled over in this country for having a broken taillight, but if you wreck the nation's economy, you're absolutely untouchable.
More of Martin O'Malley Saturday on Federal Hill, announcing that he was running for president. He had also a comment here where I guess you could mark this one as Martin O'Malley taking a shot at Hillary Clinton, which he said he had been reluctant to do. And it comes in the context, the same context of Wall Street excesses, Wall Street's power.
Recently, the CEO of Goldman Sachs let his employees know that he'd be just fine with either Bush or Clinton. I bet he would. Well, I've got news for the bullies of Wall Street. The presidency is not a crown to be passed back and forth by you between two royal families.
Sounding a little bit like Franklin Roosevelt there. Trying to sound like Franklin Roosevelt there. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. This is Midday. Dan Rodriguez with Fraser Smith from WYPR and the Daily Record. Malia Cromer from the Goucher Poll at Goucher College. And Barry Raskevar of Political Maryland. So a question for you. What do you think of O'Malley running for president? Do you have a comment about this? Marylanders or anyone who's listening to our show online today, toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. Do you hear anybody crowing about what a great president Martin O'Malley would make, aside from Martin O'Malley? And what about these messages that he's sending, this populist message, trying to carve out a space to the left of Hillary Clinton, taking up, appropriating some themes that we heard from Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, trying to carve a space to the left of Hillary Clinton, maybe to the right of Bernie Sanders here? Does that represent recognition of a shift in the country, or at least among Democrats, Malia Cromer, to the left?
There's been some recent polling done by Gallup that does indicate that the average Democrat has shifted a little bit to the left. But I think in general, this whole message with O'Malley and this populism, anti-Wall Street, really played well in 2008. But it's interesting to hear it now. We've had 8 years of a Democratic president. What has President Obama done for 8 years against Wall Street? And this is an interesting narrative, I think, that comes up on the heels of having 8 years of a Democratic president.
Well, that's interesting, Barry. In the first clip that we listened to, O'Malley was talking about Wall Street CEOs avoiding jail time because of the their part in the 2008 economic meltdown. That's sort of a shot at the Obama administration.
Well, it was. One of the ironies in that statement had to do with, well, we arrest everyone with a broken taillight, which gets back to the whole idea of zero tolerance in policing.
Yeah, you could hear it that way too, right?
Which O'Malley may have trouble answering to when he gets into the thick of it in debates and so forth, and some of the opponents start pointing a finger at him and say, you know, you really are one of the ones who helped create the problems in Baltimore with the zero policing embittering the community.
Frazier.
Well, that's now, but then I think some large percentage of the citizens in Baltimore, including the black citizens of Baltimore, were in favor of zero tolerance because they don't want it happening on their front porch. You know, the kinds of things that you can't walk down the street and be safe. And so that's his response to this.
Oh, we have to acknowledge that coming out of the 1990s and years when Baltimore had 300-plus homicides, a lot of us embraced O'Malley's anti-crime message, preventing violence message.
And what do you suppose the Baltimoreans are saying today with 43 murders in the last month,
right?
You know, near the top historically?
Well, what's debatable is the choice of strategy for dealing with that.
Well, I think that if you had the wisdom of hindsight and you saw the carnage this would create with young black men removed from their community, sort of without a future because of the box that's checked, you have a record.
You mean the mass incarceration?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of thing would moderate how aggressively you did it. You might do it anyway. But
well, one question that has not been addressed is why this response to zero tolerance now in Baltimore compared with the situation in New York City, which is having an all-time record low number of homicides, and yet, you know, the broken windows theory that lies behind this approach by the police has started in New York and has been continued by the police commissioners in New York. What are they doing differently from Baltimore? Nobody's answering questions.
Well, what's
like
happened
that.
Differently in Baltimore? Mm-hmm. There's been more gentrification in New York City, more wealth that's come into New York City, that's taken over some neighborhoods that we haven't seen here. I mean, there's still a concentration of poverty in some neighborhoods in New York City, but I don't think, Barry, like we see it here per capita.
Yeah, well, it's just an open question. But, yeah. I mean, Frazier's right that when it occurred back when O'Malley was elected in 1999, we wanted to get tough on crime. Every community did. And, you know, there wasn't much opposition to it. Times have changed, and one of the questions now for the Baltimore community is, what type of policing do you want?
Right. You know, another strategy that came along after O'Malley, more targeted enforcement, Fred Bielfeld's bad guys with guns, focusing on paroled felons who might have weapons, doing call-ins, warning them about what would happen to them. And we saw a drop in crime, drop in homicides, a 30-year low of 197 in the year 2011, without the mass incarceration. In fact, there was that Bielfeld said he would have no part of it and that he didn't understand. So while I think people wanted O'Malley's effort and welcomed it, I don't think they wanted their brothers and uncles and cousins being, you know, picked up off the street for standing on street corners or for drinking a beer out of a brown paper bag. 410-662-8780. I want to go back to Malia's point about railing against Wall Street excesses or corruption now, how many years after the economic meltdown? Like 7 or 8 years now. Does this fly? Does this work? Barry, let me ask you about
that. Yes, it does work. And I'll tell you why it works, because this is an implicit way of criticizing Hillary Clinton as a status quo candidate. One of the balancing acts, the tightrope that Martin O'Malley is trying to walk, is to not infuriate the Clinton camp with personal attacks. Because somewhere down the road, if Martin O'Malley has to withdraw, he wants to continued to campaign for Hillary Clinton as one of her key surrogates around the country and establish himself in the years to come as a presidential hopeful. So he has to differentiate himself from Hillary Clinton. And this is one way of doing it, by coming down hard on Wall Street, because nobody's going to be defending the CEOs of Wall Street.
Malia.
No, I completely agree with that assertion. But I just think the narrative is just really tough as you go after 8 years of a Democratic president. It doesn't have the same sort of sticking point that it did when you're talking about the end of the Bush era. I think another interesting thing, like back to African-American voters, especially in the cities, you talked about zero tolerance. And what a lot of polls show that Black Americans and white Americans view policing dramatically different. They're the fairness of the legal system dramatically different. And this is something that certainly Hillary Clinton, I think, could recognize as certainly a weakness with Martin O'Malley. She's already started to court the Black vote very heavily in South Carolina. She's spoken with a lot of Black female leadership in the state. And you can tell that that was a demographic that she was weak in 2008, and she does not plan on losing again.
It's interesting. Hillary Clinton has already made some statements about Baltimore, I mean, immediately following the unrest that we saw here, and she talked about poverty as well. Here's some of that.
Indeed, it is a time for wisdom. For yet again, the family of a young Black man is grieving a life cut short. Yet again, the streets of an American city are marred by violence, by shattered glass and shouts of anger and shows of force. Yet again, a community is reeling, its fault lines laid bare, and its bonds of trust and respect frayed. Yet again, brave police officers have been attacked in the line of duty. What we have seen in Baltimore should indeed, I think, does tear at our soul.
That was a speech she gave at Columbia University, I think just a day or two after the riot here, April 27th. Barry?
Yeah, and it's going to be very difficult to criticize Hillary Clinton along those lines. And the other thing you have to remember is that she is married to the person who is often jokingly referred to as the first Black president, who was wildly popular among African Americans and is still held in enormous regard by them. She has such a huge head start in that area, you don't know how the others are going to catch up, because the African-American vote is absolutely pivotal for Democratic primaries.
That's an interesting point, Barry. Thank you. Frazier.
You know, I don't know who would wear them, but suppose there were video cameras in the boardrooms of some of these banks and investment houses, and we could see people talking about what they were going to do or not do about the state of the economy and what implications or what how it implicated them or didn't. Do you see
you
what
mean,
I mean?
You mean today or do you mean at the in 2007, 2008?
I think what I'm thinking is that there's almost a relationship between what we face with the indictment of the police and the evidence that will be produced and whether or not there will be the convictions that a lot of people want. The same issues are there for the people on Wall Street. If you don't have the evidence, and I'm assuming that they don't have the evidence or some of these people would have been convicted, it's very broad. The guilt is it could be spread out quite broadly. So maybe that's part of why. But, you know, the Obama administration and the Democrats probably – and maybe the Republicans as well take the heat because nothing has happened, and everybody knows that, you know.
But in a political campaign, Martin O'Malley gets points for bringing this up, because you know it brings cheers from the audience.
Bernie Sanders is in this race. Bernie Sanders doesn't countenance what you would just say. He would start yelling at you right now, I think, if he was in the studio, Frazier. Earlier this month, the Vermont senator introduced the Too Big to Fail, Too Big to Exist Act.
Said the same thing on Saturday, as
yeah,
you know.
I know. Well, Bernie was out there first, though. Let's hear what he had to say.
Since 2009, huge financial institutions have paid $176 billion in fines and settlement payments for fraudulent and unscrupulous activities. I fear very much that the financial system is even more fragile than many people may perceive. No single financial institution should be so large that its failure would cause catastrophic risk to millions of Americans or to our nation's economic well-being. No single financial institution should have holdings so extensive that its failure would send the world economy into crisis. If an institution is too big to fail, it is too big to exist, and that is the bottom line.
Okay, Bernie Sanders. So he's talking about reform here. He's not talking about putting people in jail anymore. But he's earlier made many statements like that.
Well, we're a very sophisticated society, a very complex economy. And, you know, people who understand these things better than probably both of us, but certainly me, would say you can't start pulling on those threads or you are going to unravel things. You know, so how do you make that argument versus what so clearly he says? And many people in this country certainly do agree with that.
Well, I think when you take this income inequality, stagnant wages, themes hit home with lots of people out there, and they're akin to Wall Street soaring. You know, when people hear this.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Dan, and Malia brought it up. Who's the president now? It's not a conservative Republican.
That's right.
It's a liberal Democrat. Mm-hmm. And this is what the outcome is. What surprises me is that the Democratic candidates haven't pointed their focus in the direction of the Republican Congress, because that's where everything has been ground to a halt, and that's where the public unpopularity is the highest toward the Congress.
That's right.
And yet none of them are talking about that. They're all talking about other presidential issues.
So, and since we're talking about Wall Street reform, Dodd-Frank, we've already seen some repeal of elements of Dodd-Frank that was put in place to address these very issues that caused that meltdown. By the way, Martin O'Malley took off, of course, for Iowa on Saturday, New Hampshire, but he made an appearance on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, too, and talked about Wall Street again on that show.
I have the independence. I have the track record. I can tell you this. I am not beholden to Wall Street interests. There are not Wall Street CEOs banging down my door and trying to participate or help my campaign.
It's something I think we'll be hearing more and more of here. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. We'll take another break on the Midday Show, Midday Politics, and come back and talk some more. Again, our guests, Barry Raskovar of Political Maryland, Malia Cromer from the Goucher Poll at Goucher College, and C. Fraser Smith, the WYPR Senior News Analyst. We'll be right back.
We must put America first, and we cannot and will not rebuild the American dream here at home, though, by catering to the voices of the privileged and the powerful. Let's be honest. They were the ones who turned our economy upside down in the first place, and they're the only ones who are benefiting from that. We need to prosecute cheats. We need to reinstate Glass-Steagall, and if a bank is too big to fail without wrecking our nation's economy, then we need to break it up before it breaks us again.
Yeah, that's what Bernie was just saying. Thanks, Martin O'Malley there on Federal Hill Saturday. Malia Cromer from the Goucher Poll. What did you want to say?
Oh, Dan.
Gesturing like you wanted me to go to you next.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, what were you doing, fanning yourself?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Hot in here.
Dan, let me say something.
I'm sorry, Malia.
Let me say something about that, because one of the problems with Martin O'Malley is that in that clip, for instance, it sounds like he's reading a speech. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's coming from the heart. And indeed, if you look at Martin O'Malley's career, he seems to have tailored his position on issues for a political advantage, not because he deeply believes in it. And, you know,
That's that authenticity thing.
Yes.
Barry, that's that authenticity thing.
Yes. And
I think you just described it.
As long as the national media doesn't know Martin O'Malley well, they're just going to go for the sound bites.
Right.
And that's where he is right now. So he's got a great opportunity at the moment. To build on this, but at some point they're going to start examining his record in depth, and then you're going to start getting critical articles about O'Malley from mm-hmm. places other than the Wall Street Journal.
A question for the women in our audience. I'm just curious about this. Registered Democrats or independents, this is for you. So Martin O'Malley, whoever it is, another appealing candidate who would challenge Hillary Clinton, have you already made up your mind that Hillary Clinton is your candidate? That's my question for you. Is there anything that could change your mind about Hillary Clinton between now and your primary, either the one in Maryland next April 26th, I think, 2016, or if you're in one of those other states? 866-661-9309. At home here, 410-662-8780. This is the Midday Show in Baltimore. Let's take a call. Val, right here in Baltimore City. Thank you for calling, Val. Go right ahead.
Hi. It's nice to talk to and hear about Martin O'Malley. I just want to comment that Martin O'Malley was a great mayor in Baltimore. I moved to Canton 24 years ago, hoping to start a family and send my child to public school. His investment in the zero tolerance policy against crime in Baltimore City worked in Canton. We had drug runners on every corner, people shot in intersections. He came to our community and he worked with us to curb this type of crime. The Can Company, which is now a great business and has many different shops and small businesses, and it was a shell. There was nothing down there. And his commitment to small businesses, his commitment to education worked in Canton. We have the most enrolled, if not over-enrolled, elementary school, Hampstead Hill Academy, in the southeast part of Baltimore City now. Because of his policies when he was mayor, Canton is a place where people want to bring their families and enroll their children in school. I think he'll make a great president, and he understands people. He's a hard worker, and I wish him luck.
All right, Val, thank you very much. I haven't heard that sort of expression from anybody over the weekend or in recent times. So if you wish to say something similar or not so similar, 410-662-8780. I think the Can Company was developed when Kurt Schmoke was mayor of Baltimore. I just wanted to note that. There used to be a nice big bookstore there.
Oh, yes.
Bibelo.
Yes.
Remember Bibelo?
Wonderful chain. It's too bad it's not around.
And then it disappeared. Anyway.
I have a question. Bernie Sanders and perhaps the former mayor of Baltimore are looking for looked like a candidate for the populists. Mm-hmm. Where are they? Where are those votes? And I asked the question because of the Congress that we just elected or reelected. I mean, was there anything, was there populism driving that electorate? I don't think so. They reelected the party of the people that gave us 2008.
Yes, but a presidential primary, a presidential election is going to be different than an off-year election. You're talking about the districts, what went on out there and all those red patches across America. I agree with you, but this is going to be a different scenario.
But this is an interesting question. I mean, a populism may fly in certain Democratic primary states, but in a general election, I could see conceivably how Martin O'Malley could be the nominee of the Democratic Party. I cannot see how he can go beyond that if you start breaking down the country to see how Martin O'Malley's message would fly in the South.
It could be a Democrat, but it needs to be a more centrist message. Is that what you're saying? To win the presidency.
The vast majority of the public is right smack dab in the center.
Yeah, okay. Well, Malias, let's hear from you then on the presidential election and the way that shapes up.
Well, I think what's interesting with him, and we haven't really touched on it yet, but really the theme of that speech that he gave, a lot of it was about immigration policy. And this is a really strong one area in which Martin O'Malley, I think, has a distinct advantage because he has a track record here in the state with the DREAM Act, a part of immigration reform that's actually pretty popular, I think, across the U.S. And we even have this is the one issue that you do see Democrats and Republicans. The most recent one, Lindsey Graham throwing his hat in the race, has one to work across the aisle with Democrats on trying to this immigration reform. And I think this is an issue that Martin O'Malley can speak to differently than even a Bernie Sanders or a Hillary Clinton can.
But it's also important for an election.
It's also a really great campaign fodder in an election year.
Most of you pundits give the Democratic nominee, the Democrats, an edge going into the presidential election, given the changing demographics of the country and who they're registering with, Democratic Party.
Will they vote is the big question. How many of them will actually turn out to vote? And how does this break down state by state? I've always maintained that a presidential election is 50 separate elections. each state has to be examined in detail to see, you know, is there a growing Hispanic population in Iowa? There may not be enough of a shift there, a demographic shift to change the results from 4 or 8 or 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And back to what Frazier was saying about this populist message, those issues of what income inequality, excesses of Wall Street, flat wages, the need to raise the minimum wage, the loss of union jobs, all of that stuff. You know, I thought there was an opportunity there with the Tea Party and those on the left who saw the same problems getting together. But that never happened, and it probably will never happen because of ideology on many other issues. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, it is. You know, the election is one indication of where we are in that regard, I think, the most recent elections. But I think the other thing here is that women outvote men. And, you know, that's one of the most important elements in the election. And I think that's one of the things that Martin's up against here. I mean, if you were talking about the city of Baltimore.
And the Republicans, right? Wouldn't you say, and the Republicans in the general election, correct?
Yeah, I think the woman vote is going to be the pivotal thing in this election.
Let's take a couple more calls here. Garth in Hamden, go right ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan. So I just wanted to bring up the thing about you often hear Republicans, of course, criticizing Obama that he's a community organizer, and that what you need are people with executive experience, and people like governors and all that sort of thing. And, of course, then you have Jeb Bush looming where, you know, he was a governor and all that. So you'd have a great matchup with having O'Malley there. So that whole argument about the executive experience and all that is taken away because he's been reelected both as a mayor and reelected also as a governor. So clearly people liked what he did. And so I just think that's an important thing. And my only other quick comment would be that for Democrats who were upset about the war, nobody's been really held responsible for that. And the one thing we can do as Democrats is not vote for somebody who basically supported and allowed the war to go forward, which is Hillary Clinton. Thanks so much.
Hillary Clinton. All right. Thank you very much. By the way, we haven't talked about the Republicans. Lindsey Graham got into the race today.
What number is he? 15?
Let's see. Running would be 1, 2, 3, 4. Cruz, Paul, Rubio, Carson, Fiorina, Huckabee, Santorum, Pataki, now Graham. And then there's some probable candidates, Bush, Walker, Christie, Perry, Jindal, and Kasich, and the governor of Ohio. So
who's going to sit on the bench and who's going to be playing on the football team?
I don't know. Does anybody want to take a stab at this? Malia, do you have anything to say about the Republican side so far?
To the last caller's point, O'Malley has already rehearsed that line about we don't crown kings. So if he does run against Bush, he already has that line ready to go, mm-hmm. which would be great. It seems like Scott Walker is everybody's just waiting for him to jump in the ring. Everybody's talking about it. You know, he has the gubernatorial experience. He has the very anti-populist message from the union busting in Wisconsin. So it'll be interesting to see what it looks like in that kind of juxtaposition if he gets in the race.
And could you win that primary with 18% of the vote?
Looks like you could. Huh?
It's possible. What? I don't see how anybody.
But the very low percentage anyway.
Yeah, I don't see how anybody's going to challenge Jeb Bush in the end. I think the Republican establishment and all the money is with him.
Okay, Bush Clinton then. Looks
yeah,
like
so
far.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
But does he think that getting in the war was a bad idea? Are you clear on that?
There's like four different opinions on it, right?
Apparently.
Yeah. Alexander in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling Midday.
Hi. I'm not the kind of caller that pundits like when I phone up. I'm a self-described swing voter, okay? I'm not affiliated with any party, and I'm truly open to hearing all the candidates. I'd like to know how they're going to govern. And best of our ability to know in advance, and choose my presidential candidate based on what evidence is there, how they're going to run the country, mm-hmm. how they're going to lead us. And I'd like to know, my question for you is, how could someone like myself convince journalists and pundits like yourself to change the dialogue from, you know, strategy and horse race to actual substance? Because the last two callers talked about a little bit about substance, especially two callers ago. This is why I want to vote for O'Malley, because here's what he can do. And immediately, all your panelists change that to, well, what is that going to do for him as a strategist, as a candidate? I mean, it's also a little bit insulting to women to suggest that they're going to make their decision based on the fact that Hillary Clinton's a woman. Maybe they're interested, some of the women are voting in what she actually is going to do as a president. And we really don't have that information. The average person like myself doesn't have the time to do that kind of research to make, you know, get that data that we need to make our judgment. You guys do, and you know it, and we kind of need your help to get that information. And I turn on the radio, and I don't have time much to listen to the radio. I'm busy. I have a job, you know, and I turn the radio here a little bit, and what I hear is about is a horse race. And I really want to hear about the substance. How are these guys going to govern if they're elected, the best of your knowledge? And how can I get you guys to do that, to change your dialogue on the radio from now?
Well, it's not like, okay. I mean, it's not like we never talk about policy positions and statements and have debates of candidates. We did that with the gubernatorial election. We do it with all the elections, but this is fresh off O'Malley's announcement.
Yeah.
So we're talking politics today. And we'll, Alexander, I assure you, we will get into that as the year goes along. It's a long way until the primaries.
In answer to his question, I think it's better addressed to the candidates, because they're giving is sound bites now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no detail whatsoever. There's no specific.
A lot of platitudes.
Yes. And that is especially true with Martin O'Malley right now.
Yeah.
You're not getting any in-depth discussion whatsoever.
All right, and we will do that. It's a point well taken. I mean, we try to do that on the show here, but also we like to just talk politics. And because this is such a jammed field, especially on the Republican side so far, and the dynamics over here of O'Malley getting in, the first governor in our lifetime to declare, former Maryland governor to declare presidency, candidacy for the presidency, I thought it would be interesting to talk about it in this way. Alice has a political question for us. She's calling from the Eastern Shore. Go right ahead, Alice.
Oh, hi there. Yeah, I am definitely not a rocket scientist when it comes to political stuff, but I am a woman, and I have always told my children not to use the word hate, so I wouldn't get a bumper sticker that said, I hate Hillary. I would say, I dislike Hillary. However, I think, like the previous caller, I know what she's done, but again, sort of paralleled with O'Malley, they are just moving themselves forward for the big prize, and have always been. That is what they've always had their eye on, the big prize. Now, of course, being in Baltimore, I would say he's the favorite son, and I wish him good luck, and met him in person. He's very, very, very personable, and I think that, you know, O'Malley, if you put O'Malley and Hillary together, I'm going to go for Martin. Now, my big question is this.
Why didn't he run for the Senate?
It's a post question.
All right, Alice, we're short of time. Your question was, why didn't he run for Mikulski's seat? Barry, do you have a quick comment on that? We're short of time now.
He doesn't like the legislative branch at all. He likes the idea of being an executive. And he had larger ambitions as well.
Let's see, a couple of emails I wanted to read before we got off the air for the first hour today. Michelle says, as an African-American, I don't necessarily agree that because African-Americans voted overwhelmingly for Bill Clinton that they would translate to votes for Hillary. African-Americans somehow identify with Bill, his folksiness and charisma that does not apply to Hillary. Kim says, while I think Martin O'Malley is very smart and did benefit our city and state, I will be voting for Clinton, partly because she is a woman, but more so because of her experience as Secretary of State. However, I won't be pounding the pavement for her due to her ties to special interests, which really turns me off. If Hillary Clinton wasn't running, I would be pounding the pavement for Martin O'Malley. Edward in Baltimore says, anything resembling a vision coming from O'Malley is a recent development, because the only vision he ever demonstrated in Baltimore and Maryland was for how to get reelected. He is utterly forgettable, other than for holding three primo political offices here, but he sure does look good in person. More email comments for further shows. I'll read them on the midday at WYPR.org. Frazier Smith, thank you for being here today.
Glad to be here, Dan.
Malia Cromer, nice to have you back with us from the Goucher Poll.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And Barry Raskovar from Political Maryland. Barry has a new blog post on the O'Malley candidacy. You can find it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page, and we just tweeted it out a little while ago. Thanks, Barry.
Always a pleasure.
Lunch today provided by Rosina Gourmet since 1999, the year O'Malley ran for mayor. Rosina Gourmet has served handmade, locally sourced ingredients for their sandwiches, soups, salads, and vegetarian items. Rosina Gourmet, located in Canton, downtown Baltimore, and Harbor East. Please stay tuned for the news and the second hour of our show.